the greatest gift I ever got is when I walk in, someone finds out who I am, they know that I'll not only take pain with them, I'll die with them.
Never quit. Never quit. Never quit radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today we're going to switch it up a little bit, and we're doing an episode swap with our good friend Dale Brisby, who's the host of the Rodeo Time podcast and also a legendary bull riding gypsy soul. He's a great guy and also did a show recently with Marcus. I thought it was so great that I wanted you guys to listen to it. And if you have not done yet, go check out his channel. He's got some great content on there as well. But with that being said, thank you for listening, and here we go.
That feeling of nervousness, but then overcoming it, stepping off the helo.
I didn't come here to get hurt. I came here to hurt you.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. I understand what you were telling us when you sent us over there and what things were and why they were, but now we actually know. And some of us made it back.
Rodeo Time, the podcast. It's like a TNQ collab. Team Never Quit. We have in the house the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. Marcus Luttrell, along with the world's greatest bull rider.
That's right.
Just two greats right in the room.
I'm honored to be in here.
You're honored to be in your
I'm
own
honored
house.
To be in here. That's never happened before.
You're honored to be in your own house with Dale Brisby.
That's right.
I was in here, was it 2 years ago?
Maybe. Has it been that long?
I think it was last January, January 22. So it's almost the end of 23. So
it was cooler, right?
Yeah, it was cooler. Yeah. So that was a period in my life where there was some changing going on.
Going through a transitional period in my life right now, right? Is that what you're doing?
I didn't know it.
You never do.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, most people think that they're having problems.
Yeah.
Or that life just got hard on them for some reason. They'll blame anything and everything but the fact that they're making a transition. I guess because as you get older, really, people don't point it out. You know, I don't know what that is, but when you notice it, it makes it a lot easier. It makes everything great, actually.
Well, I kind of noticed some of it. I guess what I didn't notice is how much is the reason why is – you know, in preparation, I'd read your second book even for this and, you know, read Lone Survivor, but I also read Service. And so coming on your podcast was like, it was the first of maybe a dozen books that came out of GWAT. And so... there, look at me calling it GWAT even.
That's good. That's squared away. At least, yeah. There are certain things you say, I can hear it. And if I hear it come out of your mouth, I know you know some stuff.
Yeah. I read, and they happened to be most of them, you know, Navy SEAL books. Yeah.
So my GWATs are completely different than the Storms and Shields and the Nam guys and the Koreans and the World War One, II, all that.
Yep.
Completely different.
So I read that book and I really enjoyed Service and I wanted to keep reading books. As a believer, I was like, I want to also read some books that challenge my faith. Cause like that one obviously challenged just me as a man, you know, physically. And then I wanted to, I read like the Screwtape Letters by C.S. Lewis and I would alternate and I went back and then I read American Sniper. Then I read Mere Christianity. Then I read I could name them off if you weren't asking me on the podcast.
No, it's good.
Some of them are on that shelf right there.
Right.
End of the Fire, Dakota Meyer. You know, just a lot of y'all.
The best one about obviously. Our crew is the fact that it's the true stories. Life wrote that book.
Yep.
And you can tell when you read one of them.
Yeah.
And just lends perspective, especially from SEALs. Because you got one from each walk of life down here, and we all got thrown into the same mixer. And it's just, they're my favorite. They're the one that motivate me more than anything.
Well, you get mentioned in a lot of them. The ones that I read, at least, you know, talking about Jocko's books. Yep. And
Leif, all them guys, man. Leif, we all served together.
Right.
This is the best part about this. And this goes for military wide. Is the fact that we were all over there together.
Yeah.
Like Dakota, all those guys. We didn't work together in there, but we were in the same blood, same mud is what we say.
Yep.
And what it does is it ties our worlds together.
Because
we'll have been to some of the same places, and then you hear some of the scraps that our guys have been in. I was like, oh, I've been there, man. I remember that.
Yeah. Rob O'Neill's books.
Yeah, Robbie. How about that?
Yeah,
I mean, there's two opposite ends of the spectrum in our community, from Robbie's to what happened to me is the worst, and it lets you know what we can take. And then Robbie's and that squad lets you know how great we can be.
Well, and he was even there on the mountain for
parts of it. Had to come get me.
Yep.
Everybody had to come get me. It was an all hands kind of deal.
It's on deck.
They took me way down in the bottom.
Right.
And yeah. So if anybody says that they were in Afghanistan in 05, they had to come get me.
Dang.
I probably cost the taxpayers a lot of money trying to come down there. Don't hold me to it. All right. I'm sorry.
Well, I read two books that were prior to what was it? Robert's Ridge and Alone at Dawn.
Yeah.
Which they were both stories about Robert's Ridge, but Alone at Dawn is like a little later and had to do more with Chapman and his story. But that, to me, that was those books were crazy because it kind of laid the groundwork of maybe what Afghanistan was like.
Yeah,
you know, and like it's a lot more rugged than like when because I always pictured Iraq as just everything that happened in those 20 years. Like I pictured that
most
scenery.
Most do,
but it's not.
You think desert.
Yes.
And when people think desert, they think desert.
Yes.
And it's pretty amazing. And I read a study somewhere that 50% of all the people don't leave the town they grew up in.
Right.
Think about that.
That's a lot.
That's quite a bit, right?
Yes.
So fundamentally, how you perceive things are basically what you're shown in the first condition. Very rarely do you change that. And it goes for like wars. Like, hey, you may have fought in Iraq. Must have been the desert. It's not. It's just not desert. I mean, there's cities out there.
Yeah.
And it goes to the way back. Babylon, that's where we were. That's what Iraq is, Babylon. And Afghanistan, very beautiful. Mountainous terrain, but there's flat thing. Matter of fact, if you, Alexander the Great, when he started doing his thing, when he came around Macedonia, went all the way through and came up, he stopped in Afghanistan. And along the way, he named all the towns Alexander, Alexandria, and stuff like that. I mean, you can follow this dude's path.
You bet.
And then you get into, I didn't know this, but I think it's Kandahar. They used to call Afghanistan Candyland because of the ruby, the jewels,
right?
The priceless stones that are there,
right?
And it makes sense with all the mountains and everything. You can't believe what's in there. And there used to be these beautiful carvings of everything in the mountains and everything, but it all got destroyed. Dang. Now it's all war torn. That's what they like to do. They like to fight over there. It's still, you can still travel back in time on Earth and get a great glimpse of what that looks like.
You just might have to fight the Taliban
do
it.
Well, you got to live like, you got to. Exactly. When you go in there, you can see what it looks like way back in the day with no electricity, you know, all that. It's still there.
Yeah.
It's almost as like when we started expanding and we started evolving as humans, man, or civilization started to do that, and you can trace it and you can see it and it's still there. There's pockets and places that don't even, I remember walking into a village and I've never seen a white dude.
Dang.
And you know how you know that? You can tell by the look on their face.
Yeah.
There's a look humans get when they see something for the first time.
Right.
They can't, especially if they've heard about it. And with our crew, you got to think all those sci-fi movies that you watch.
When you guys show up all kitted out.
You can't believe it. You talk about men falling out of the sky with glowing green eyes and aliens. That are bulletproof, painted up. That's us.
Yeah.
The only way you get more advanced than us or deadly than us is you have to drop a nuke.
Right.
Because, I mean, short of ray guns and all that, which we got all kinds of toys. Can't believe it.
Yeah,
I took it as far as you could go.
I can't imagine seeing you guys for the first time ever at night.
It's terrifying. Can't see us. Looks all you see is glowing green eyes.
Yep.
From the nods. And then fire comes out from our hands because you can't see our rifles. Or these lasers show up. Some are visible, some are invisible.
Right.
And we don't talk. It's really quiet. All you hear are these explosions. Something, the house will be gone. You hear these cries and stuff like that. And then all of a sudden, it gets, this whirlwind shows up.
Yeah.
And just dirt flying everywhere. Can't see anything. And then we're gone. We just disappear.
It's the sexiest thing you've ever seen.
Like, don't think what you see walking around here in the States, a guy's like, oh, I was in the military and I was a GWAT and this, that, and the other. And you're looking at him. You look completely different when you climb on that bull. You know that?
Right. Yeah, okay. You have to.
You have to.
You have
That's
to.
A different dude.
Correct.
It shows up doing that.
Yeah.
I was with Governor Perry the other day, and somehow, some way, we started talking about rodeo, and he did something to me, made me laugh real hard. And he was, I don't know how we managed to do it, but he started getting into the position of doing it, and he crosses, and he goes, all right, let him have me.
Yeah, let him have me.
Let him have me.
Yeah.
That's great, because that's what life's like. It's like, hey, man, there's some situations you get into, you be like, hey, I came here to jump on this sucker, but... It's the other way around, right?
there's a lot of guys in rodeo where sometimes, like, that's the look on their face, where instead of like, let me have him, they're saying like,
let him have me.
Yeah, we say that every now and then.
Oh.
But you can tell it. And I'm sure even over there, there's times when, like, I know, I can't remember the story of the one guy in Chris Kyle's book where, you know, he turned around and he just, or no, maybe it was Rob O'Neill, but he kept turning around and the guy wasn't there. He's supposed to be watching his back and he's one, you know, I'm sure there's guys that you ran around with that were kind of more the let him have me type, but they want to have fought
rather than love. I understand what you're saying. Sure.
And then when they talk about it, you wouldn't know that that's the kind of person they were.
Right. Oh, I get what you're saying.
There's a lot of people in rodeo like that, where they're like, when they nod, they got that look of let him have me. But when they're at the bar that night, you would think that they were J.B. Mooney.
All buckle.
You know, they were Chris Shivers or somebody. And I'm sure there were some people like that, you know, maybe they liked the idea of it more than. But what scares me is the people that love the actual fight. You know,
that's how they're made for that.
And I'm sure once they get to your level, you can't really fake your way to that, to the level you guys are.
That's why the training is designed the way it is, because people show up wanting to beat on their chest and thinking they're somebody, and I want to do this till the misery sets in. Mm-hmm. And that just separates them quick. I mean, real fast. You can't get around it.
Yeah.
Because we put you in every environment to bring out your mind, your body, and your spirit. One of those, if all three of those aren't wired tight and working together, one will freaking own you, man.
Yeah, you find it out.
Real quick. And it's the elements that do that. Like, all you have to do is step into the elements with them. You don't have to apply any pressure and just see what happens.
But were there still people that were like really good at it with training, but not so much in real life? Or did the training really, I'm sure there's some instances that are exceptions to the rule, but for the most part, the training really does
everything
set up so what important. Happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I could give you the world, and if I don't give you any discipline, you won't own anything. You can't get anything done. But I can give you discipline and not give you anything else, and you'll have everything. So when we go in, it's just a kind of a test to see what you're made of, see why you really want to be there, see if it's worth being there. Because you, whether you believe this or not, you are designed for something.
Right.
You can go off and do something else. That's free will. But you really are designed for something. And there's a calling, a purpose comes into your heart. You can't hide it. Like, when you get around the guys you're supposed to be around, something lights up.
You bet.
When you step into the arena that you're supposed to be in, you light up.
Yep.
That dude could be the quietest, drag-ass, laziest son of a gun you ever met until you threw his armor on him. And then you see a rampaging beast.
Right.
I mean, complete opposite ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
The nicest guy you ever. Remember that. Anytime you're out running around, you run a dude who's real nice, all, you know, trying to be nice. You're probably dealing with the deadliest thing on the planet.
Yeah.
I know that because I'm part of them. I'm in that fraternity. Yeah. There are guys in my fraternity that scare me. Scare me. Just because of how far they'll take it in the beginning. You got to understand there's levels. Yeah. Where they're supposed to be. I got guys that'll go from 0 to 100 miles an hour in a second. Just because that's what they are.
Yeah.
It's like everybody, when they walk around, they see a dog that's well-trained. Mm-hmm. They love it. Like when that sucker's sitting there and is perched up and his eyes are locked on whatever it's supposed to be, his ears are straight up, and then you got the one that's not like that. Everyone still loves the one that's not disciplined, right?
Yes.
But when you see that sucker that walks in that is, it changes everything.
For sure.
And what our training does is it starts all that, and it keeps on. Imagine I'm raising kids now, so I'm always on to my kids about being disciplined and being a gentleman. You know how hard that is?
Oh, man. Yeah,
to stay it for one day all the time, it's difficult. Like, you actually have to put out to do that, to open the door every time the lady comes in, to say you're welcome after someone says you thank you, stand up when she stands up, sit down when she gets back, right? Everything that goes into making a gentleman or a knight or whatever you want to call them this day and age, it's actually tough to keep doing every one of them. And there's a checklist. But the more you do it, it just becomes repetitive. Your body will naturally absorb it. And that's the same way it is in the teams. I mean, that's all we do is train. It's like a UFC fighter or anybody else who ropes all the time. If all they're doing is that, regardless, if you're better than them, they can still get it. They'll still get it.
American hats. You know why? Because I'm an American. I'm not a communist. I would be also wearing their t-shirt or a cap because I'm on a podcast. I got these headphones on, but they don't sell those. All they sell, all they make, are cabo hats because they're cabos. If you want to be one, wear an American hat.
So one thing I've thought about pretty much since I've read your book, Service, in regards to training, I think about it often. If not every day, every other day. I'm sure you guys think about it a lot more too, but the Mike Mansoor story. So to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, was he on the rooftop with Marines or was it other SEALs?
They were doing block clearance, house to house.
And that was in Ramadi?
Yeah, in Ramadi.
And
him and Mark Lee were together.
Okay. So
in the SEAL teams, if you get a Michael and a Marcus together, it's going to be on.
A Michael and a Mark.
And a Michael and a Mark. You put the two together, it's going to be on.
Somebody's getting a medal.
That's it. Usually them are Michaels. If you look at our Medal of Honors, they're all Michaels.
Yeah.
Most of them.
So I thought he was on a rooftop when that happened. Will you correct me on that story?
He was coming up and he got killed in a stairwell.
Mansoor.
Mark did. Michael got killed. Oh, grenade.
Yeah,
Mansoor. Jumped on a grenade.
Right. Wasn't he on a rooftop?
Rooftop, yeah.
Yeah, the grenade come over.
So it's difficult to, it's like a rooftop could be another level in wherever in Iraq. They sleep on the roofs.
Yes, sir.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
So imagine they were all sitting in this room squared up and a grenade came flying in there and he jumped on it.
So
can you imagine doing that?
How I cannot. And that's my question.
Do you know what? That's how you
training do that?
Well, anybody named Michael has a servant heart.
Yeah.
We just don't hand names out here for just indiscriminately. If a Michael walks in the freaking door, you need to know two things about him. He probably likes to get out of line and raise hell.
Yeah.
He likes to be bad till he gets caught.
Yeah.
But that son of a gun, when it comes time to protect, he can't help it.
Yeah.
They can't help it. Anybody named Michael will do that.
Yeah.
Especially if they love you, even if they don't. And yeah, our training teaches all that and stuff like that. But man, when the rubber meets the road, it was like the first time you get shot at. You know, and that's why they do that stuff to us. And you can bet it was a mad dash to get on that grenade.
Really?
Yeah, with our guys.
Who was in there with him?
Oh, I don't.
I could have sworn reading your book, I thought you'd.
Yeah, they're in there, but.
But anyway.
Yeah.
Regardless, he jumped on it they would be safe, whether they were Marines or fellow SEALs.
How about that?
I can't imagine. Because how much time did he have?
Less than a couple seconds. Enough time to know what was about to happen.
And then
react. Not enough time to get that sucker out of there.
Yeah.
Like sometimes when those things roll in, and it happens a lot. Like in our crew, like they would roll them up on us. These grenade teams come in hard and heavy. We'd have to kick them down the stairs. Or they wouldn't go in through the wind or whatever. But with them, they did. And then if you check our history in the military, there's a lot of guys who have had to do that. Jump on grenades and die.
So one of the reasons that I think about it so often is because, I mean, obviously he's an elite soldier, Navy SEAL, but like, is that even possible with like a civilian? Like, or is the training something part of what gets him to that point? I mean, obviously.
Yeah, sure. You would see it with a mom protecting her cubs, her kids. And it's something like that. It'd have to be love. Because ultimately that's what drives that.
You bet.
You love the guys you're with. That's our baseline. You know that, right? That's why they do the things that they do to us and beat us to death and guys die. Like, if you're standing there and you're taking someone taking pain with you, especially if there's other dudes dying and they just won't go anywhere, it changes everything. Like, the greatest gift I ever got was when I walk in, someone finds out who I am, they know that I'll not only take pain with them, I'll die with them. I've already proven that multiple times. So it opened up a world to me that is hard to get into. And I didn't even want it. I didn't ask for that. It happened, right? So God's will. But when you're with these guys, you can't believe how much fun we have, because our training sucks. It's always hard.
Right.
It just is. But then if you're doing something with your friends, it's not work. It's like, hey, I don't care what we're doing. If all the guys are there, you know how hard we're going to laugh? You know how hard we freaking laugh? I mean, you can't, because there's stuff we do that we get into that some of the guys aren't good at. And then you watch them struggle. You know, a little suffering goes a long way, man.
Yeah.
And if you're suffering there with somebody else, it removes a component. Being alone is terrible. That's usually when people end it, because they're suffering silence.
Yeah.
You know, and we're all suffering down here.
Yeah, that DJ Shipley told me the same thing.
He's awesome dude.
He's
the real deal. He's one of the dudes I was afraid of.
About Mike. And that was the first thing he said. He's like, well, it's just intriguing to me. I think if you were to give, you know, most, you know, adult males like, hey, there's going to come this appointment you have on Friday. You're going to have to save some people and you get ready for it and you're going, and then, all right, here it happens. But just the him jumping on a grenade, like, that's the epitome of a servant heart. But he only had 2 seconds, and that was his knee-jerk reaction. And DJ said, well, it's because his brothers are in there.
Yeah.
And so, like you said, love.
You don't give a damn about yourself.
Right.
That goes away. You get rid of that in training. They pull that away from you.
Yeah.
That's probably why it's so hard on us when we get into the civilian world, because you're used to being able to rely on everybody.
And now you can't.
And you can't, because everyone's trying to get one on you. Or they think, and it's usually because they think you're trying to get one on them. No one is just, we pair up automatically. You get my respect. That Trident says a lot. Mm-hmm. And then you have to lose it. And even then it's difficult with us, man. It's freaking difficult, you know, because team guys, we like to mess up. Women, whiskey, all that stuff like that. They get strung out on that stuff. You can't fault it for nothing. Boys will be boys. And my guys like to play a lot.
Yeah.
But that's part of the training, man. However they captured that. And remember, if I can handle that, and if I became this, so can you. I just hadn't leaned on you like that. Because now we're all civilized. It's a voluntary thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to want to go in there.
Right.
But a lot of you guys, you know, you shortchange yourselves. You think you're weaker than you actually are. That's a mental thing. Mm-hmm. And you know that, because after you do something hard, you capture that mental, that clarity of what it is you just went through. And then not only that, you'll be able to see it. So you'll be standing next to somebody who didn't go through it, and be like, oh, I can't do this. But you'll have already been through it. You'll be like, oh, yeah, you can.
You bet.
Not only can you handle this, you're going to do phenomenal in it.
I guess, you know, being a young male in 2023, having looked at our nation that's been in war, and there's, you know, war fighters like yourself and Mike Mansoor and DJ Shipley that come out of that, it's impossible for a guy, especially someone who's in an adrenaline type game like rodeo, to often wonder what I would have been like standing next to one of you guys, or just what would I have done? Would I have, you know, not like, you know, could I shoot the best or run the fastest or pick up the most dudes, but, you know, running out of a war field, but more like, would I have given my all, what I've done, what I've been able to, what I've wanted to jump on the grenade, you know, or would I be the, I think it was in Tim Kennedy's book, he was telling a story about a guy who jumped the other way, and it ended up being a dud, and they jokingly called him Medal of Honor for the hard time, we can love like you can't believe,
but we'll pick on you like you,
and
matter of fact, most of our life is picking on each other,
right?
That's how you know they love you. It's like, hey, man, if I'm not messing with you, is when you need to have a concern.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, like, real concern. If team guys aren't picking on you, or they're not messing, they're just kind of like, that's a problem in our community. You need to know that about us. Like, right. They switch everything on us. So when life throws a normal bad situation that would be for y'all on us, it's not bad anymore. It's like, oh, this is what I was designed for. Like I said, most of my guys have problems in y'all's world because it's boring.
Yeah. So speaking of like just boring and whatnot, you came out of SEAL training in 05?
01.
Golly, what?
Actually, 2000. I was the first class to graduate out of there, or second class to graduate in 2000.
05 is when.
Oh, I was already, I'd been in for a while.
That's when some other stuff went down.
Yeah.
So you came out.
I came into the SEAL teams back in the 1900s.
It was the Wild West when you were over there compared to the end.
They hadn't made a movie or written a book about it, what it was like in Iraq and Afghanistan when we first got there. Because now we won't give you all that.
Yeah.
No way. Wild West, that's easy. There's women there.
Yeah.
Where we went, there wasn't. You understand me? Like, you talk about men doing we took as far as we could go.
Yeah.
That's why y'all don't ever hear about it. Y'all don't ever hear about that 01 to 05 years.
Yeah, I had a buddy that in high school, and he was over there like 03, maybe early 04.
That's when we started really getting after it.
And he said, yeah, after my first deployment, they called and they were like, y'all got to stop running over people, like in with your Humvees.
Man, they had a different set of rules on there. If you were outside after 10 o'clock, we were on you.
Yeah.
I don't care what you was doing. I mean, they told us that. Both countries. This is what you're here for. If you don't do that, we're going to come down on you.
Right.
That's how they hit us. So then once, you know, it's anything, man, once you get your battle rhythm, it gets good to you, man. With SEALs, we'll see how far we can take it. You got to know that.
So you had been trained by people that had never been to war.
Yeah. That was a big deal. That was a real big deal when we first went in there. I had the Storms and the Shields were my instructors, and they were trained by the Vietnam dudes. The Storms and the Shields had an engagement, but it wasn't a long one. So imagine how tense they were right there. So it was a unique time to be in SEAL teams. And not only that, once they had trained us and we got into combat, they showed up. They showed up out there with us.
Right.
So you had the Storms, the Shields, and the GWATs all in one spot. That's why it was crazy. Matter of fact, it makes sense now. I never really thought about it. But about 05 was when they probably leveled out, got all their combat experience, and went back to doing the normal leadership stuff.
Right.
Our brass had to catch up, and they did.
And training maybe changed a little bit.
Completely. Because I was training Vietnam tactics. When I came off the plane, my first stop was Kuwait, and I had a Vietnam flak jacket on. It was green with the big pillow around the neck and everything that.
Yeah, I think, don't you have a... Somebody shared a picture of it or something.
I didn't even have a shirt underneath. I mean, you got to understand. We came off it. One of my favorite.
You're wearing something similar to that, at least.
One of my officers, I'll never forget him. I'll never forget this. And I come walking into camp. He was sitting there, had a fire going, had his tent set up. And he had a pair of khaki pants on, cargo pants on. He had a muscle shirt, like a straight up wife beater, tucked in, and had a leather belt and had a revolver tucked in the back. And then he had remember those 1970s sweatbands? Red, white, and blue ones.
Yeah.
He had both those on each wrist, complete with the head one. That was it.
Dang.
That's all he had on.
Like something out of a movie.
Better than a movie.
Better than a movie.
That was better than a movie. And I remember looking at him, and I thought, he was the man. He was like, this is my boss. He's probably 27. You know what I mean? That's what.
Yeah.
Military's young guys.
Right.
Like the old man, he's in his 40s, late 40s, mid 50s. The admirals and generals. That's not old, though.
Correct.
I think it is when you're in, but yeah, military is the guy, it's all young.
How old were you when you walked onto that scene?
I was mid-20s.
Right.
You know, damage age.
Yeah, damage
age. Where you like
age.
To do damage.
Yeah. But so
I tell you, man, I got a pure heart. That's my only saving grace. I got a wicked mind and an appetite for destruction.
So did you
was feeding all that.
Did you go to Afghanistan first, then Iraq?
Iraq.
You went to Iraq.
Went
first.
To Iraq first. They sent my brother to Afghanistan first, and then I went to Iraq. I was there doing a shock and awe. Both of them.
My mom married a guy that Greg Coker. He was he was over there like 3 weeks after. Like he was in October 01, and he was a night stalker.
Yeah, yeah.
And
you guys are great.
He was telling stories about you know, there's just nothing over there yet. You know, now when you think of stories or movies, you know, there's all these bases and all this kind of infrastructure. But
and being the first ones that are different.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine like if someone like the UN or one, another country came in and just their SF guys dropped in here.
Right.
How we would react to them.
Mm-hmm.
And we wouldn't stand for that.
Right.
You know, Americans wouldn't stand for that.
Yeah.
But it could have, you know, if it does happen, then what? Then you got to. So then weren't any rules. It's just like our moral code kept us on track. And the Night Stalkers are the best, man, because they had to learn how to fly those. They knew how to fly. Like they practiced flying. Let me tell you when they got good is when they had to land in those mountains and in the cities. Like some of those pilots, man, would land. I mean, they'd come down in some in between two buildings on the street. He's like, oh, I'll get in here. Watch this. And I mean, rotors just striking either side of the building and sparks flying. And then just drop the ramp. He's like, you're good. Get out. And I mean, we'd come flowing out there, and he'd be like, he'd just take. It was the sexiest shit you ever see. Like they come on rooftops and put one wheel down or they drop us in the water and the ass end of that helicopter fills up with water. And he's just sitting there going, I got it. I mean, and we're talking about 20-year-old kids flying these things.
Yeah.
So think about the mentality. I mean, if someone will dump them in the drink or on the boat or something, be like, oh, I'll go get another bird. I'll be right back. You know, if once you get your ass kicked in the military, if you come back with a good attitude, that's good.
Right.
If you come up with a bad one, then we'll kind of funny you into a different category. But...
So
go ahead. I'm sorry.
No,
I talk
you go
all day
ahead.
About the pilots, man. They just
you go ahead. I what were you in Ramadi with Jocko?
Yeah.
Is that when you were under Jocko?
No. So he was there with Chris Kyle and Mikey and Mark and all of them. They were his platoon was ahead of me.
Okay.
So I'd gotten back from Afghanistan. I was in the hospital. I got out and then I went to Team 5. And so when we deploy, there's They're in order kind of deal. Not team order, but like it's hard to explain. But anyhow, so he was over there.
So you saw him after?
I was on the Advon. Yeah.
After
05, I went back in 06 and 07. And he was there. I was on the Advon. I'd made some ranks, so I was in a leadership position. So I went in there first again, and he was there.
I got you.
You know him?
I've not met him. No, it was just one of the books.
That intimidating look.
Books I read.
Now he looks like a civilian. He's intimidating. You should have seen him back in the day.
I can only imagine.
You know, his face looks like it could fit in a Spartan helmet. Perfect. Like the whole. You know what I'm talking about? Like I think he should have been born back in the day, swinging an axe at somebody's head or something.
Yeah, with
like
300.
That. Right.
Being the movie 300.
Right there. That's where he's at. And he led like that. Like you talk to all those guys, you wanted to work for him. There's a couple guys underneath you. His chief Tony, and then Leif Babin.
Mm-hmm.
Who's out now? They were all in the same platoon.
It sounded like hearing them, him and I think in Chris's book they talk about Ramadi, but like just the op tempo, which for the non-Navy SEALs out there, I'll explain op tempo. No, I'm just kidding. But it sounded like every night stuff was going on.
Okay, so the story's coming back from that platoon. Chris Kyle was there, and this was the last stand of all the bad guys. They got pushed into this town called Ramadi.
Yes.
Okay. Well, Jocko took his boys in there, and he would go out in the daytime.
Yes.
And he would run American flag up a building, up the side of
a
building.
To start a fight.
To start a fight.
Yes.
He's like, come on, bitches. You want to start something? I'm here. Let's roll. And I mean, would kick ass. Right? They were dropping flyers, and they're scared to death of them dudes. We'd just be sitting back. I was still in San Diego and Coronado getting ready to come over there. And just reading all the after-action reports were fantastic. No one can write up a story like trying to tell you how they got into a fight better than military people. Like, yeah, we rolled up on this dude, you know, like that. The lawyers hate it. We got lawyers that have to be like, you can't write, I smoked this dude, freaking, what? You know, you can't say that. You know, like, I engaged the target, and blah, 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 right? That's the one thing about SEALs being from 18 to 27, we're all litigating lawyers now. We know every rule of engagement, every rule of combat. We've watched every Law and Order. You know, we know everything.
But so Jocko was really good at writing, though, wasn't he? So, like, I'm sure his after-action reports were...
I mean, it would pull you in like a Grisham novel. But better, because you knew it was just legit.
Yeah.
And I remember showing up out there. I mean, it was freaking war. If you can imagine what war looks like, and then you had this ragtag bunch of SEALs just stuck right in the middle, because we're kind of like bastards. Nobody... The Navy owns us, but the Army and the Marine Corps own all the battle spaces. So when we get put in there, it's at the behest of them.
Mm-hmm.
Back then, in those days, it was. And you would talk about having some fun. We would just, you got to. I mean, that we got to do our job, what we were trained for. Any imagination that a SEAL had of what it was to do that job, we got to do it.
Yeah.
And then we had the 160th with us. We had the Rangers, the Green Berets, and they wanted to get do their thing. So all of us wanted to be there.
Right.
Like, we wanted to be there, show the GWADs. The GWADs wanted to show the Vietnam guys and the Storms and the Shields that we learned what you taught us.
Yeah.
Not only that, we want to show you.
Yeah.
And we did. We definitely did.
So how many times were you in Iraq before you went to Afghanistan?
I was just once.
Just once.
For about 7 months. And then I got back for about a year and some change, and then I went to Afghanistan.
I rodeoed with a Marine, Ross Sherrod, and he was he got out of basic training, and he was sitting in an airport on 9/11. Like he didn't get to fly back.
I wonder what that was like.
Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about, like being actually at the hub when that went down.
Right.
And where were you at?
I was in school.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was. We watched the second.
Check. Tower Everyone did
on, and
yeah, everybody did.
But but he was just talking about, like, rolling out of the back of one of those Amtraks with the very first time they got shot at, with a bunch of guys and, you know, leaders who had never been in battle. And but he talked about, I can't remember what town it was in over there, just the largest cemetery in the world.
Yeah.
And clearing out
the cemetery. Clearing that cemetery.
Clearing the cemetery.
Those are the worst.
Yeah, because there's tombs.
they're above ground.
At above
and then
ground.
There are holes. Like, you have guys patrolling at night, just walking, bloop, disappears.
So you,
the cemetery, the Fallujah.
Fallujah,
yeah.
Yeah, that's where he was.
Sure Fallujah. Was. Freaking Marines. Or an Army. Fallujah.
So you guys would just be intertwined.
Yeah, we'd just be in there time. With them like bastards. You know, they were doing the deal, man. We'd just be on the side. On the sides. And then we would provide overwatch to snipers.
Uh-huh.
Like Chris, that was his deal. He wouldn't come off the gun. People always ask, like, why did he have those astronomical numbers? Because he'd just stay there.
He'd just stay out there.
Disciplined to stay on days. And he wouldn't come off the glass. He'd just sit there and look.
And just stay hooked.
Yep.
The movie portrayed him pretty accurately.
Yeah, and he, great dude. Great dude, man. Country boy. From, yeah.
How much of that played a role in the way he was, you know, effective on the battlefield, do you think?
That's why he was so effective.
That is one.
Well, that's why he's so regular. I mean, he was a cowboy, bull rider, you know, grew up rodeoing, just hunting. That's who do you think makes the best?
Yeah,
at that job.
You bet.
That demographic. I'm looking at one of them.
Yeah.
You don't think I'd throw your rifle and take you out there and freaking get this done?
Yes, sir.
One, because you're used to it. In my family, you got to have one kill. Even my daughters, they don't want to. I was like, hey, you're gonna go out there and learn how to do that, just in case you got to defend yourself or you got to eat.
You bet.
I don't care if you ever do it again, but you're going to do it once. And then as you grow older, you know, you're not supposed to kill, says that.
Right.
So that comes into play. But,
well,
you are supposed to kill, actually.
Talking
certain
about,
things to eat.
You bet. Talking about Chris Kyle, I was driving in traffic with, or actually Cowboy Cerrone was driving, the UFC Hall of Famer.
Oh, I know who he is.
And...
Everybody does.
He was like doing, he kind of moved, changed lanes and just nonchalant. We were kind of talking. Apparently it pissed somebody off behind him. And this dude was road raging with Cowboy.
Yeah.
And he was doing all but pulling over. And Cowboy stayed pretty calm. But we just talked about, like, man, can you imagine like road raging with somebody and then you get out to find out that it's Cowboy Cerrone? And it reminded me of I think it's in Service where you tell the story about Chris where. Yeah. He didn't want the story told.
Yeah.
But where it's a good one. Those two guys.
A couple of my guys got some stories they don't want told, but they're so damn good, I'm going to tell them.
Yeah.
I mean, we got them. I hear that all the time about the road rage thing.
But those two guys, they...
Stole his truck?
Tried to steal his truck. Yeah, yeah. Didn't realize they were trying to steal the truck of the Chris most Kyle. Lethal
That's God's, sniper. God has a great way of kind of moving some of the guys over in front of people that they need to be dealt with.
Right.
Like, I'm a firm believer in that now. Like, hey, man, if God worked you over to me so you could act a fool in front of me, then that's my cue to do my thing. You know what I'm saying? That's just the way it is.
Yeah, it's like on my elk hunt, the guide said, if God puts an elk within bow range of you, that is God telling you that is your elk for this hunt.
I mean, what you need to take the shot. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Like if there is being humble, and then there's being so humble you don't use the gifts you've been given.
Yep. That's a good point.
That's called abuse.
Yeah.
And you know, and everyone's got different skill sets. They just do. We're all different.
Yeah.
And once you acknowledge that fact, then you appreciate what their gift is, especially when they get to use it. It's like with any other person watching somebody do what they, like when you were talking about watching us do our thing, you couldn't imagine, do you understand when we come out and watch y'all at the arena? And I'm always thinking, I was like, I could ride that better than he could. Guys do that. That's a thing, man.
For sure.
We all appreciate each other's worlds because we understand how hard something is. Uh-huh. Like you compare my life off of what you've been through, mm-hmm. which means it has to be difficult because I know what you have to go through. So it takes a lot to do what you do. That's where respect comes from. And every man searches for that. That's what you want. That's why you earn money. That's why you get out and get a skill set. You get a job. Is you want respect from your fellow man.
It definitely gave me, I want to say it was service. Like the first time I ran anything further than like 3 miles, my goal was last year to run to town, which was 11 miles. And I'm not trying to brag about having ran, but I was like listening to this your book describing Hell Week, and I was at like mile 5 or 6. It was already the furthest I'd ran, and then I was like, I'm just going to keep going. So anyways, I listening to your book and listening, giving me perspective, I was like, surely if these guys can make it through Hell Week, I can at least just jog 10 miles. But just the insane perspective of trying to imagine you guys going through that, not to mention, you know, being on the mountain, your experience there, but just listening to Hell Week. I can't imagine the perspective it gives you guys from that point forward in your life.
You can do anything.
You can do anything.
Anything. Once they secure you from Hell Week, there's a physical, mental, and spiritual change that occurs.
For the rest of your life.
For the rest of your life. Can never go back.
Yeah.
I completely see things through a different set of lenses than y'all do.
Yeah. Like, Marcus, you have to run to Houston. Okay, check.
Let's do it.
Let's go.
I got a guy I can call that will freaking motivate me the whole way if I have problems.
Yep.
And that's perspective when you're in there going through something, because we all have a cross to bear. Mm-hmm. It's going to get tacked on you. And when it does, you got some guys next to you that it's not a thing for them. There'll be some stuff that you go through that is simple for somebody else, but it's difficult for you. And that's why they're there. That's all guys need, too. You just got to look up, man. And the minute I thought I was suffering, I just kind of turned my head and look at one of my boys and look at their face. And like, oh, he's definitely got it worse than me.
Yeah.
And then makes everything all right because they're not going anywhere. I mean, the stuff that comes out of it, it's very, very difficult, right? But it does. There are a few things that a SEAL goes through. Hell Week's one of them. When you get your trident stamped into your chest, physical change, physical, mental, emotional, everything changes. You can feel it, you know it, and you don't ever take it off.
Hey, you're out.
Yeah, hey, that's right. Coming at you live. RodeoTime.com. Kevin. RodeoTime.com. So if you're enjoying this episode, hopefully you'd enjoy these shirts. They just went live on RodeoTime.com. All limited edition. We got a new JB Mooney shirt. Very limited. That one will not come back. Caps, shirts, even a hoodie. RodeoTime.com.
What would you advise like young people that are trying to decide whether they want to be a Navy, Marine, you know, in the Navy and the Marines, Army, because they're nervous about if they were to fail some reason, they would then just have to be on a ship.
Yeah, well, everyone fails down here. That's part of life. That's kind of what it is. But get that out of your head.
Right.
Just if you go in there thinking about this, especially if you're talking about it out loud.
Yep.
Like we just don't even talk about, like, people start talking about bad stuff. What if this happens? I'm like, as soon as you put it in the air,
yep,
it's possible.
You might as well do.
Yeah, because exactly. We don't do that at all.
That just seems to be the one reason most I hear, you know,
that's an excuse. It's not really a reason.
Yeah.
Because they're not committed into doing that, or they're probably not their purpose. They're doing it because somebody else wants them to, or they think it's they've seen something cool in it. But all that goes away when you're not having to go through it. Like my brother and I have seen some kids go in. They watch the movies and documentaries, especially when you're hanging around one of them. Mm-hmm. Like everything I'm telling you about my community is firing you up. Like you want to go do it.
Right.
But I'm sitting here telling you, no, you don't. It's terrible. It's the worst, hardest job on the planet of Earth. That's only a handful of us. You're not supposed to do it.
Yeah.
But I couldn't help it. Like it's a, like you just know. Like you know what you are. You freaking know it. And the minute you step next to something that's just like you, then you really know. Mm-hmm. And they all show up at one spot. And I mean, once you get in together, it's the greatest life. It's the greatest life. I miss it. Oh, man. I understand the purpose of it now, what it was for and what it got me and where it got me. But it's like with anything, man, you can't stay in one spot and have that much fun all the time. It's not fair.
Yeah.
That's kind of, I mean, it's like, hey, there's a reason why there's time limits. You can't be in there. Young guys, that's a young guy thing.
Right.
Then once you get your discipline, oh, you got to grow up. That's the hardest thing I ever had to do. Become an adult. Freaking hated it.
One thing I observe with like a lot of rodeo cowboys talking about like being younger is it's almost just like the word is escaping me, but just like a naivety towards the dangers.
Yeah.
And then
it's not dangerous to you when you're young.
Right.
It's only dangerous to you when you get old.
Right. Like guys don't think about like what a bull or a bronc.
That's
or
what I'm saying. You don't have to because it's not dangerous to you.
Right.
Your body is designed for that at an age to take that. That's why those thoughts aren't in there. Mm-hmm. But then as you get older, what that's designed to do is like a sign telling you this ain't your job no more. Mm-hmm. You've moved on. You can't go back. I mean, you can understand it, but you're not supposed to be in that arena. And so God changes stuff inside of you. So you will know it. Because if your body's always online and your mind, that never goes. And that spirit, man, it only gets ramped up. I mean, you don't think that I still think I can do a front flip, freaking three kicks and freaking all that? Yeah, in my mind, I can. If I went out there and if I try to stand up right now, I have to give it a second. The whole knee doesn't do what it's supposed to, right? That's God's little way of turning things off.
Yep.
You got to look at it like that. I mean, there are levels here. I mean, you climb in and then you go on the downside. But once you grow up, you become an adult. You'll know that because the kids around you be asking you questions. Mm-hmm. They'll need guidance. And that's how this whole thing works, man, is you go through your scenarios, you learn from them, then you turn around and you teach the ones coming up underneath. If you don't do that, stand by because it can get dangerous. Freaking undisciplined kids, they're dangerous, man.
Yeah. Speaking of, you know, giving advice, so I usually get either a text or a call from you once, twice a month. And it's been super helpful for me, you know, with having like my dad die, you know, 10 years ago and having to navigate the world and what's going on. And so getting just occasional, you know, advice from you, for instance, you know, I think right when the Ukraine stuff happened, you know, is one of the first conversations you and I talked, but getting some advice from someone who knows more about what's going on in the world was super helpful. And then I met Travis Pastrana and turns out like he's got that same relationship with you. And it made me wonder like how many of us, you know, young guys out here are, because sometimes whenever you text or call, it's very intentional and it's on a specific time. And then when you get off the phone, it's almost like, you know, you're very scheduled about it. And it made me wonder, like, maybe there's like a dozen of like Dale Brisby, Travis Pastrana's like people that Marcus has under his wing.
Can't imagine what kind of team I got.
Yeah.
It's taking me a long time to build you all up, but I got you.
And I don't even want you to tell me who they are, but how many? Or you can't tell me that either.
Oh.
It's all top secret. Classified. It's all classified.
Well, but if you knew there was one, you gotta know there's others,
right? Yeah, I
you I are. Don't get me wrong. I mean, that's like in your arena,
right?
Like you, the best way I ever heard this explained is like so. Everything down here is a vibrational tone. You understand that?
Mm-hmm.
Like even this table vibrates at a certain where it makes it a solid, right? When you turn on the radio, there's a certain music you like to listen to because it catches you, right? It's that vibrational tone that they're pitching out. Imagine your birthday is your radio station. when people listen to you talk, man, they like the way you, your tone, the way you sing, the way you speak. It like catches them. It doesn't matter what you're saying, man. I just like to hear you talk. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep.
Okay. You speak a certain language that only certain people can hear.
I got you.
Now, if I took you over to the NASCAR folks and we want to sit down and start talking NASCAR, but you're throwing rodeo terms, they may get it. Most likely they won't.
Right.
You understand where I'm going
yes,
with that?
Absolutely. Okay.
That's where slang, that's where it talks about multiple tongues.
Yep.
How many can you speak?
Right.
You speak yours definitely, and you're definitely speaking mine now. You understand? I can hear some of the verbiage out of your mouth. You're learning my language.
Yes, sir.
You can hear what I'm saying? Good. That's the best. It's called the void. There's a place down here called the void. All right, and there's the talking and the living and the normal life stuff, but then there's the interim when you get in the middle of it. And you, man, not only do you hear what each other are saying, man, like it resonates. Like I don't get offended at all. I can understand where you, and I can see it. I can see why you see that. Uh-huh. And then I'm able to take what I can see in your world and turn it around verbiage-wise and give it to somebody else. And the only reason we ever get in fights, arguments, or anything like that is because of the difference of communication.
Well, one of the ways that you saw, like in my world, and you were talking about one of the times that we've had those conversations, you talked about fear.
Yeah.
And the difference in fear and being anxious and how that plays a role in the way you move forward.
Yeah.
And, you know, you had taken your experiences and then you used them compared to like the way I might respond in the rodeo arena and how we should address that with life. That was one of the times that it was super impactful. One of the little ways that you spoke that language, I guess, filled that void.
Yeah. So imagine every fear that you come up to is like a rope that's attached on one of those little stands.
Yep.
Like the purple rope.
A stanza.
Is that what it's called?
I think nice. It's called a stanza.
Very good.
Maybe.
Yeah. We'll get a judge's ruling on that, but it sounds right.
Yeah. Jamie, can you look that up for us?
So when every time that fear comes in, there's that rope. But I mean, once you unhook it or you step over it, right? Or if someone lets you in, then you start to see. And it's kind of fear is your fuel for your willpower. It's almost what you're supposed to be looking at. Mm-hmm. Imagine the greatest gifts that you have or your greatest weaknesses down here. So as you go through life, they present themselves.
Oh, dang.
You know what I mean?
Deep water and heights.
Heights get me. I'm not a big fan of jumping out of airplanes. Flying through the sky like that gives me, I mean, I got some of my guys love it. They freaking know they're angels and they can fly through there. And I mean, they just, but every time I get up there, I'm like, man. And then I spend most of my time underwater. I don't really have a problem with that. Being underwater is easy, but.
Well, yeah, you kind of grew up. Or
I got that part, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the one thing I will say I was good at.
So I love how you're describing that and like the way when you are fearful of something or nervous about something, that's what you're meant for. So, because I could just imagine there might be times when you're on your way in the back of a helicopter where... Or was it even, was that one of those moments where that little
feeling? Here's where your friends come. Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, the anticipation of death is worse than death. Yeah, yes. It's worse than death itself. So
just like at a rodeo.
Absolutely.
Well.
Same with a fight. As soon as that first punch is thrown, you're like.
Then it's on.
It's on.
Right.
Exactly. And it's the same way. As soon as that ramp goes down and we fast rope out. And believe it or not, there's a couple of guys that I always look to. The Stoics, mm-hmm. Like their faces never changed no matter what we're doing. These are their voice inflection or the tone. Like, hey, how you doing? It's pretty bad. Yeah, how you doing? This is great. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Them guys?
Like Jocko, maybe.
Jocko, thank you. And he's just like, man, he always looked like he knew what he was doing. That's a confidence. Like guys resonate with that. You need one. You need one, just one. Yeah. And I could, you know, you can feel it. The Spidey sense, that's real. Yep. You can sharpen that sucker. So even when that thing would be going off, once you know what you are, all it takes is somebody to remind you. And then if there's nothing else down here more deadly than you are, it removes all doubt.
Yep.
And we know that just because that's a fact.
I got to go on Derek Wolfe's podcast the other day. He's a defensive lineman for the Denver Broncos. He just retired. And he was in the NFL for 10 years. He won a Super Bowl with Peyton Manning, but I asked him what he missed the most, and like as quick as he could answer, he kind of looked up for a second, but he just went straight to, he said, the violence. And it gave me chills just because he's not one of those guys that you think about, well, being in the NFL for 10 years, you know, multiple combat deployments would be the same thing. It's just like, you're obviously not one of those guys that let him have me. I want to just have, this is something I want to have done.
Yeah.
This is rather than this is something I enjoy doing and I'm going to miss that feeling of nervousness, but then overcoming it, stepping off the helo.
I didn't come here to get hurt. I came here to hurt you.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. That kind of mentality. And especially when you're, I couldn't imagine what it'd be like in the league, but when you're going against other guys and like you hit them and they go down and they come, I mean, you know, you physically hit them.
Right. And they
and they stand up and like, that's a good shot. Or something like that. Right. And you're like, that has to do something to a man. Like when you have that ability to freaking think about discipline, they have not to go around town and wreck everybody just because they can. I mean, they have that ability. What's stopping them from doing that all the time? Discipline and love. Thank God.
Yes.
I got a whole crew of guys that love to kill things. Thank God we have discipline, because if you said something I didn't enjoy.
No kidding.
You know what I'm talking about? No one ever thinks about that anymore, but you should.
Yeah.
The most dangerous thing down here is that human.
Yeah. That's what, you know, Jordan Peterson talks about being dangerous, but then being able to control it.
Those are the most dangerous guys you got.
Did you ever feel like, talking about your ability and being dangerous and stepping off that helo, did you ever feel like when you did after the first punch, I feel like, the best way, after reading all your books, all these, your guys' books, like, they would really, the only time they might have an upper hand on you is if they had way more numbers. Did you ever feel like you met, like, someone who had some sort of training where it's just like, oh, this is a good fight, even just one-on-one?
Yeah. The Chechens are good.
Oh, the redheads.
Man, there's some boys over there. All the mountain boys can fight. They whipped our ass.
Yeah.
I mean, they're... I'm real upfront about that.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I'm not one of them guys be like, oh, a bunch of punks. Like, no. And if you're badass, and I know it, I'll tell everybody that you are.
You bet.
That's just, that's a warrior mentality. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's just a warrior mentality. Don't take anything away from them on their fight capacity. Right. Like, talking smack. I can do that all day long. But like, if we're doing a straight up conversation, I'm like, yeah, man, it's fucking tough. Why do you think we're fighting?
Yeah.
I mean, that's how it is.
Yeah, but then
you know, and we know, because there was a couple of snipers. Chris killed a lot of them that would be out there that were real good.
Yeah,
I mean, guys would just be dropping, and that's intimidating when you got somebody shooting at you. You know where it comes from? That's demoralizing, actually, because you don't know where to go.
Yeah,
God. You're like, hey, I'm gonna hide behind that barrel. I'm like, well, what if he's on that side?
No kidding.
The snipers are the worst.
Yeah,
I mean, because you just literally don't know. You try to take off running. I'm like, well.
Yeah,
I want you to run.
Yeah,
then I'm gonna really have some fun with you. So then you see these guys kind of doing all the zigzag, and like, you know, well, how do you even get out of that? I remember there was a few times we got hit by some snipers, and it was like, man. And then that's all they do over there. There's plenty of time to work. Like grenade teams. These grenade teams would show up on us, three or four guys, man, and just work us. Like they had all the tech because they know the terrain, the area where the. I mean, we may know the buildings and the sides of the buildings, but they know where the damage is on the street.
Uh-huh.
And like what doors are open and who lives in where and who's cool and who's not cool. I always think about it like that. Imagine us going overseas into a city and fighting the Bloods of the Crips.
Yep.
In their own neighborhood. It's just not a good idea. You know, you just wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
And if we did do it, we'd have to go in there for some destruction because the house, you know what I'm talking about? It's just like, man, they just move and they'll come back around. If you don't live in somewhere and trying to occupy, it's very, very difficult.
Yeah.
It was an impossible job we put on them young guys. I mean, think about us, 18 to 25. That's who you send over there to be diplomats.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's not what we do at that age.
Ross said they had a lot of snipers even over on the end of like the cemetery.
That's what, yeah.
In Fallujah. That would be.
Man, dude, they were everywhere.
And then they'd be, and sometimes they'd even be like in a mosque where you guys couldn't do anything.
There was one guy who was in a hospital. We think he was one of the doctors.
Really?
Yeah. He was a good sniper too, because he would take one shot, one kill, and then we wouldn't hear from him again for a few days.
Dang.
And then he was a level 3 sniper because he could drop moving targets. He could hit some of our guys while they were moving. And then always out of out of that hospital. And then we think he just hid his weapon up in the ceiling. And we couldn't go in there. And then the mosques, we weren't allowed to go in there either.
Because we had morals and they didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Most people overlook that. I mean, we're very violent. We're men of violence. We're not really violent men. I mean, some of my guys are violent, but if you put a rule on us, we follow it.
Yeah.
That's what soldiers do, as SEALs do. I mean, we're not just out there inadvertently just doing our thing, man. But once you tell us to do it now, get out of the way.
That was one thing I didn't realize before reading all those books. In every book, you know, it talked about rules of engagement and like how much of an issue that was just internally for everybody and having to, like, it just seemed to really, obviously you guys too, you know, it may be,
it got
that
to
might
us
be the pinnacle.
Yeah, wasn't bad, but I mean, eventually got to us.
Right. Just
like a lot of the regular army guys, the grunts and everything, that they'd have to be shot. Uh-huh. Or I'll give you, for instance, we were doing a sniper overwatch mission. We were in this building, and there was a guy, there was an army guy, he had a 60 with him, and then one of my snipers was in the tower with him, and they started taking gunfire into the tower. He's like, "Hey, man, hit him with that 60. He's like, "Man, if I ain't getting hit, I can't shoot back." That's what he said to me over the radio. I was like, all right. I was like, "Well, just do your deal. Start shooting." To my guy.
Yeah.
But, yeah. There were certain times in the war, like when they were trying to cease, you know, trying to do the diplomatic thing, and we would obviously have to be like that.
Yeah.
So if you run across a GWAT, man, he's got a lot of skills.
Yeah.
Not just gunfighting skills. He's got people skills.
Right. Because you just had to.
Had to.
From every situation.
Yep.
Dang. What, one of the things that I asked you in when I was on your podcast, I was talking about, man, if something was going to, I think the way I worded it was like, if something was going to happen with our country, would it now be a good time since we have all these war fighters that are trained, you know, people like yourself that are now training the up and coming, you know, 18, 19 year olds. How do you feel about that? And this is kind of maybe more a little bit of a selfish question for my peace of mind moving forward. How do you feel about the timing of everything that's going on in the world today? And does it give you peace moving forward?
Not complete peace. I don't have a worry at all.
Really?
Nope. Not one at all. Yeah. Excited, actually.
Yeah.
And when it comes to our country, if anybody's out there in America and you're worried about it, let me tell you something. There's a big difference between training to fight and actually being in one. Those are huge differences. So for the last 20 years, your boys and girls who've been training, we've actually been fighting, and now we're back. We made it back home. So they're just kind of sitting around.
Yeah.
And if you can imagine, if anything was to come into this country, what they would run into, you just think they're going to run into the Army and the Marine Corps. That's not at all what lives in here. They'll run into every sci-fi monster, every animal, every Freddy Krueger, Michael Myers, Predator. People will come out of the woodworks to do stuff just to see if it works. All my farmers will be running over you with tractors and hay spikes.
Yeah,
I'll have every 18-wheeler blocked every road and run over every tank because my people like to fight.
Yeah.
American, you want to know why America's always in something? Well, one, we're made up of everybody. And two, we like to fight.
Yeah.
We just do. And for anybody to deny that would be lying to all of us.
Yeah.
That's just the way it is. Especially if there's a reason. Like a lot of our guys, you know, like talk smack, whatever, man. But if we got a solid reason, like with Israel, that says in the Bible, man, you're supposed to back them up.
That's what I know.
Period.
Yeah.
That's why everybody's like, hey, like you got Ukraine, all these political wars jumping off. That's one thing. When something serious jumps off, like serious, everyone knows about it.
Right.
Like if people are complaining about the weather and who you're sleeping with, everything's great. Everything's great.
Yep.
If you're complaining about them things. When things get hard, you'll know it. Oh, that kind of silliness will go away. Personal stuff. All the personal baggage will go away when war kicks off, especially if it happens in here. Mm-hmm. That's for sure.
But the way things are looking, it probably wouldn't happen in here.
No, I don't have it somewhere else.
Yeah. How different, you know, I was listening to somebody talk there. I think it was on Sean Ryan's show. I was listening to a CIA guy talk about how every war is different. They're not going to look the same. Even like you had prepared for like Vietnam, well, then Iraq was really different. You
know? Oh, yeah.
And so, like, if there is another war, it would look completely different. Even Ukraine was like a proxy war.
Look, we have the satellites in space now, everyone knows where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
They can see underwater. They know when you're coming, what you're fueling up, what you're firing, where you're, I mean, there's no surprise attacks anymore. That's gone. All right, my generation was the last of all that. We got full benefit. We got the tech and the old school, new school war for the GWATs. Right. These new alphas, they're alphas. I think they're calling them alphas now. The alphas that are online and then whatever that generation is, this is different. This is a game ender.
How would the next war potentially look?
It'd be everybody fighting in one spot and then fire. Because usually people who can't fight well have the most dangerous weapons. So you got to think that somebody will have had enough. I mean, it's just always something to fight about.
Yeah.
If you understood why your purpose, why you're really down here, you wouldn't do that. You wouldn't fight. We're actually built for better things. We're actually built for greatness. Mm-hmm. So to be doing that is something. But talks about it. I mean, how long? There's just enough's enough, right? And you gotta finally just say, "Hey, we all grew up that way." You know, somebody picking on you, messing with you all the time, man. After that fight goes down, it's over,
mm-hmm.
right? Everything's usually cool.
Yeah.
But the next one will be, it'll be all everything's in whatever we got to play with. It'll be in the war, everything.
Yeah.
And we already dropped a nuke. When we dropped those two bombs, three. I mean, excuse me. We changed rules.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? Well, like we initiated that.
Right.
So.
Well, that's comforting to hear you just talk about, you know, like how little, you know, you're worried, you know.
Worried's not, no. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
You can't imagine what that would be like. Just because our guys love to make the stories. And my guys and girls, the GWATs, have fought with the chain around their neck their whole life.
Mm-hmm.
You'll never actually... No matter what you've heard about us, it was nothing. It's probably 40% of what we're capable of because of the rules and everything. A real war is like, hey, man, I came here. I'm gonna get rid of you.
Yeah.
We're not talking about nothing. What are you even talking about?
Yeah.
So that's just the way it is. That's 20 years of war. Housing crisis, a freaking pandemic. I mean, a biblical freeze, a biblical heat stroke, you know, a biblical flood. You beat our people to death in every way, in every capacity. They're upset. They just got over being sick, so they're kind of hungover. You don't think that when you step back and actually look at the earth and what everyone's having to go through, everybody's pretty worked up about something?
Yeah.
Okay. Kind of hard to calm down from that. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's just hard to calm down from that, especially when people start fighting. So.
How's your brother feel?
He's the same way I do. He got sent up there for a reason. He's trying to figure all that out. I mean, we were talking earlier, there's no leadership in any of the houses.
Right.
None. And,
they don't.
He's brand new up there.
They don't have a leader in the House.
Oh, I don't have a leader in the Senate. He's
checked out.
Mentally compromised. And then obviously POTUS has been mentally compromised as well.
Checked out.
We can all see that. Yeah. Checked out, vacation, whatever you want. You know, be polite. I'm trying to be polite.
Him in the Senate. Yeah. Let's go get some ice cream.
I'm not saying anything that's not true or absolutely. Fact. So, I mean, if you're wondering why things are difficult now, and it's funny because right in the middle of when America is going through what we're going through is when the world's falling apart. Coincidences aren't really a thing for me, but.
Yeah. They,
a lot of people are putting this together, right?
A lot of people are realizing like.
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, and even the rest of the world is like, if we're going to do anything out of line, we need to do it now while America's not paying attention.
Yeah. I think it all started because people let stuff slide.
Uh-huh.
Like I the political game and the way they're going back and forth, I get that. It's kind of rhetoric. But the minute they relaxed the grooming standards in the Senate is when I noticed.
Yeah.
That's when I took attention. Because if you let that slide, what else you let slide? And that's all it takes. It's for leadership. Let something slide. Because if the kids are looking at it, then it must be okay. That's how this works.
Yeah.
That's why you have to act a certain way. That's why you have to grow up. And they're not doing that up there.
Well, there's literally, so like kids going through boot camp right now, they've got like, you know, a version of DJ Shipley as their drill instructor who's been through all this stuff.
Yeah, right.
You know, so like, That would be what was encouraging to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because not that you, I mean, you guys in 01, like you said, the Desert Storm guys were, you know, but Desert Storm wasn't quite GWAT. And I think that there's a little something to the fact that, you know, there's this whole nother level of experience out there and the stories, you know, that are fresh.
Yeah.
So that's encouraging to me. Trying to draw the good out of the bad.
The only difficulty I see it is that the kids that are going into the uniform are becoming exceptionally strong, and the ones that aren't are becoming exceptionally weak. And so when you divide them like that, I'm curious as to what the relationship will be.
You bet.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Then you got the kid, the COVID babies. They missed all that school. So then if they're not educated and they're mentally weak and then they're physically weak and they're spiritually weak. Ooh. You understand?
All the things.
Yeah. It's like one of those wouldn't be bad. Two of them wouldn't be bad.
There'll be like a chunk of people coming through of a certain
age. We got
age.
People that went underground won't come back up.
Yeah.
I mean, they're probably still down there.
Yeah. And if they're not physically, they're mentally.
That's right.
Yeah.
I mean, I've been talking about this a lot. You hear that mind, body, and spirit, mind, body, and spirit. Everybody's heard that, even if you've studied it. So there's three types of humans. You got body people. You could tell when they walk in the door. He wasn't born looking like that.
Yes, sir.
You got to earn that. Not only do you have to earn it, you have to hold it.
Right.
So when you see somebody walk in the door, you automatically know that they got discipline and they can take pain and they'll stick to a routine. And you ask them too, like, hey, man, why do you go to that gym? Why do you do that workout? And they'll be like, this is how it affects my body. Not only that, this is why I say this thing's made of clay. After 2 weeks, you can mold it. Seeing how big you can make, I mean, the physical changes, and there's that void we talked about. There are things that come with that. Mm-hmm. Confidence, courage, commitment comes with strength. Then you got the people who are the minds. You can't really identify them unless they open their mouth. And as soon as they do, you kind of got them. Mm-hmm. And most of the kids who like to, you're like, hey, why do you go to that gym? Why do you read why that schoolhouse gym? Same thing. Why do you read those books? Why do you study that philosophy? Because it does this. Okay. Most of the kids who go to the body kids, they go to the gym. They don't like going to the schoolhouse.
Right.
And the mind kids, the smart kids, don't like going to the gym. Well, then you got spirits. You can see them. They're usually wearing beads, got some crystals tucked in their pants. They smell a certain way. They hit you with a Bible when they open their mouth. The way they move, you can see a spirit.
Yep.
They usually don't like going to the gym. Knowing what happens when you train your body and it does that, and you get all of this stuff by training your body. Like there is physical and emotional and spiritual things that go with training that. Mm-hmm. It's like a visual sign that if you train that, it will change. Knowing what happens when you read certain philosophies and you read certain books and when you store them, when you manifest that in your head, it changes a person. Right. You can tell by the way they walk. Knowing what happens when you train the mind and the body, when you go into the train the spirit, like why that spiritual kung fu? Why Baptist? Why Methodist? Why do you go to that spiritual gym? It does this for me. All right. You ever run across anybody that trains all three of them? Probably not.
Not very many.
They're rare. But if you take the time to train each one of those, you can't believe what it'll do to you. That's called getting your mind, body, and your spirit in line. They'll talk to each other. And knowing that you can, look at Mr. Olympia. That's somebody who's committed to his body.
Right.
You find somebody who's committed to all three of those like that, I mean, you got plenty of time in your day. It just, when they explained it to me like that, I was like, I'm hearing you now. I get the breakdown on that, and I understand now why people are like, hey, you need to get to church. You need to get to the schoolhouse. You need to get to the gym. Because in order to live down here, you got to have all three of those to survive. Because life will kill the body. A human can kill the mind, and a situation can kill the spirit if they're not trained right. Yep. And you know as well as I do, you can get through something, mind and body, but if it broke your spirit, you just can't even lift this thing. It'll just, that's your driver.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, it says it. We're not from here. Yeah. This is your avatar. You've been tucked in that sucker.
Yeah.
And the mind is a computer that works all that together. You're in here trying to drive this thing.
That's such a good point. You know, like when my dad died, there was a brief moment where just like I couldn't operate.
Yeah, it happens.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it didn't take me long because there was a lot of peace wrapped up in, you know, his, because I was at peace with where I, he was, and I was at peace with the way I was going to move forward. But for a brief moment there, it just felt lost, and like it broke my spirit for a moment. And I just, nothing else mattered, physically, mentally, nothing else mattered.
Yeah, sometimes it's situational, turn all that off. You ever felt that moment where just a heart feels it? Mm-hmm. Like not your body. It's like somebody grabbed a hold of your heart and squeezed that thing. It has its own emotions. It's its own thing. It's not just your pump, man. That thing's right. Got a memory, and it's got emotions in it.
So I guess like in the moment, that's what blows my mind about you guys when you're in war. You don't have time to grieve and address your spirit because there's still bullets flying.
That's right.
And so to me, that's something, maybe it is something training can get you ready for, but it just...
So I kind of use this analogy when I go to describe that. It's almost when you go into the military and you go into the combat realm, it's like walking into the gym and all you're doing is working out the whole time until you get out. Then is when you're going to feel being sore. Then is when you're going to feel your pain. But it lasts, instead of one day, it lasts for 1 year, 2 years, or 3 years. So you never have time. As most people, when they go through a situation, they have time to grieve. And there's the seven levels of grieving and whatever. And then you process it and you go on. But by the time we start processing the bad situation, another one just showed up.
Right.
So it just pushed the other one out the door. You don't even think about it. It's in there, though. Oh, it's in there. But they just keep stacking them up for us for 20 years. So guys will get out and they'll start thinking about it. Reflection. In the beginning, you receive, then you reflect, and then you respond. So they're in their reflection part.
I was talking to a SEAL that was saying he felt like one of the major reasons that guys do have trouble when they get out is not necessarily that they lost a buddy while they were in, because that's where that buddy wanted to be.
Yeah, that's not.
He said it was, he felt like a lot of the explosions and just the way it messed with their head played a big role.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like CTE.
Well, that's an injury. Like, my guys have injuries. Like, traumatic, like the head's been knocked and bruised and beaten. And yeah, that's a real thing.
Breaching and
all that. Because they don't even care. Like my breachers, dude, the breachers are freaking.
Yeah.
They just, we didn't think about this stuff. We didn't think we were going to live this long. We talk about it all the time. Like we just didn't think we were going to live to be in this part of it.
Right.
So now the guy's like, I get these headaches. And I'm like, well, I know. That's because all the C4 that blew up around your head. I was standing in the rocks and the chain and someone yelling at you and falling down the mountain and going underwater on scuba for 8 hours and coming back up, jumping out of an airplane. Yeah, there's probably something in there that got a little tweaked. Don't worry, we'll fix it.
Yeah.
Just hold the line, boys. You know what I mean? My guys don't care.
Yeah.
Like, SEAL is designed for that. Take risks, die if necessary. That's the sexiest thing we ever heard.
Yeah.
Hard part for us is being civilized.
Yeah.
And that's why I tell all my guys now, I'm like, hey, look, when you, just imagine you never get out of SEAL teams. Your new assignment was to be a civilian. You're undercover. Like, your job is to marry that lady, protect her, raise her kids, get them to school, do what she says. Oh, by the way, she outranks you. You can't yell back. And then I've been telling my guys this, too. Just this might sting a little bit. All right. But if you ever caught anybody talking to your wife and kids the way you do, you'd kill them. Mm. Not talk down to them, not hurt them, not beat on them.
Yeah.
Kill them.
Yeah.
You understand that? And when I say it like that, they feel that. They hear that and they understand it. Mm-hmm. Like, you have been trained to take this pain for them. You've actually been trained to defend people from you.
Right.
From you.
Yeah.
And when I tell them like that, they, you know, sometimes you just got to remind them of what they are. I don't yell at them, man. I just remind you of what in the hell you are, because that's a thing. And then they just keep going. You only got one day down here, man. That's why our phrase is the only easy day was yesterday. You know, we got today.
Are you training? Is there any sort of ongoing training you do? Like any fighting?
Me?
Firearms in the gym?
Oh, yeah, every day. I have a routine every day. And then it goes, I have a daily routine that I do, and then there's also a monthly routine. So, like, when the holidays, every month is something different. It's like a reward.
Okay.
So you do something each month. You can break this down to the coffee you drink at a certain time. It's like a reward instead of just, like, something that you do. Absolutely.
What's your routine?
What month?
October.
Okay, so it's Halloween.
Okay.
So, and it's also the holiday season. So through the summer, starting about January, February, you get in shape. So all the way through the summer. And then as soon as you hit October 31st, baby, that's the belly, the beer, and good food.
So you're just kind of...
just chill.
Laid back.
Yeah, especially go. You relax.
That's
your routine. You got to have some relaxed time down here.
Yeah.
Okay. That's why the holidays are good food. Everybody's in a good mood. It's like you kicked your ass and you got your ass kicked all year. Now we're just going to come. We're going to kind of relax this thing a little bit. Do the stretch. Like I'll switch my foods, my diet, my what I drink when the months roll around as opposed to the hot and the cold.
I heard you say that on a podcast that you do. You go hard January and through whatever, yeah, and then you take a break.
That's right. So January, you know, you've been off for the holidays. You don't want to work out. You're out of shape. So what I do is for January, I drive down to the gym and just walk in there. I don't even work out.
Right.
You just get your body used to being there. This is the best way to do this. Everybody wants to lift 300-400 pounds. I was like, we're going to start by 1 pound, not 20, 50, and 80. I was like, you want to lose 20 pounds? We're going to start with one. I bet you I can get you on a out of that funk quicker than anybody.
You bet.
Because I break it down by the moment. I was like, we're just going to look at the gym for a month.
Look at the gym.
Just going to look at it. Think about how good we're going to look when we come out of there.
Yep.
And then you go down there and you do kind of like, maybe I'll pick a weight up and put it over on and be like, oh, that's good for today, man. You know, this might have been my bad day. I'm going to this, that, and the other. And then you go in there and you got your simple workout and you build up to it. And when you do it that way, your body wants it.
Uh-huh.
It's like when you feed a drug to it, when you feed any kind of food to it, man, it gets kind of used to it as opposed to just plowing it in there. Because then it'll react like it got hurt.
Right.
Like a lot of people, I'll see it walk in there and they'll shock the body. That's good for kids. You can shock the shit out of them. But like for an adult, when you get older, man, no. Slow is smooth, smooth is fast. It's like with anything else you do, man. As long as you're slow is smooth, smooth is fast, your body will react and it remembers too.
So second month after you're working out, is it like a lot of free weights? And
yeah, so I have to go down to, I go to a place in Florida, a hospital. I live in there and I've been doing it for 16 years now in February.
Okay.
And that gets me, I mean, my body remembers it.
Dang.
The minute I walk in there, it starts. It won't eat certain foods. And once you routine your body enough, it'll start doing it automatically, especially with when the seasons change. Imagine how long it takes you to like something and then get bored of it. You want to know how long? 3 months. You know why? Because seasons change every 3 months. You don't like the heat? Wait 3 months. It'll change. You don't like the cold? Wait 3 months. It'll change down here. If you don't like anything, it'll change, including you. That's what happens. That's the one constant down here is that we change.
What if I don't like coal?
Well, that's the cool part about it because we got different environments you can go live in, right?
Yeah, there you go.
That's it. That's how it works. So it's like you can condition this thing to do anything, and it will react and respond.
Yeah. Do you do any like hand-to-hand? Like we just started training jiu-jitsu.
Oh, good for you.
At the gym. Turns out in my town of 500, there's a black belt.
Yeah.
And so he's coming in twice a week in the mornings.
That's good. So I have the kids now.
Uh-huh.
And I grew up studying away too. So I take them to jiu-jitsu and you got to be a ground, you got to have a ground game and a striking game.
Okay.
So you get your jiu-jitsu, but then make sure you do a basic karate or Muay Thai or boxing. Be great. If you do wrestling, make sure you have a stand-up game. Because all fights start from your feet.
Right.
Usually, right out, especially out here. Think about that. Most people don't want to go to the ground, especially what environment you're in. But if you do go to the ground, jiu-jitsu's for that.
So I have thought about that a lot because I think if someone... It would take, I don't have any desire to go start a fight at all. Zero. Never have. But if a fight did start with me, not only would it start standing up, but it would probably very quickly go into them grabbing my hair.
Yeah, of course.
And so that's what's motivated me. Maybe that alone has motivated me to start jiu-jitsu because I was talking to Cerrone about it, and I was like, really the only thing I have going for me is I'm not in terrible shape, and I know that I'll try real hard.
Yeah.
And I probably wouldn't quit as easily as the next person they grab. But other than that, I am helpless.
Yeah, so remember, the first person to lose a fight, first person to lose an argument, or the first person to lose their cool. First person to start breathing hard. As soon as you lose your breath. The breath's the most important thing we got down here. You know that. It's the first thing you do when you're born. It's the last thing you do when you die. You're trying to learn how to control that sucker.
Gotcha.
So the reason if a fight started behind you and you got knocked on the ground and then you roll over, your jiu-jitsu, boom, it's there.